tried the login, took him to another meeting. And the other two are struggling to connect, but still be joining just now. Okay, that I think that we can now start. Colleagues, this is the agenda. As we presented it last time, and then we said the other matters would be in the third term program that we are adopting today. I'm talking about matters for consideration during this term of Parliament. So today we are looking at how many items? Four items.
Recording in progress.
Is the presentation on the DFSCs, the Defence Force Service Commission's annual activity report for 2021. And two is the feedback on the engagement between the Defence Force Service Commission and the Minister of Defence. There was a, the minister promised a retreat to look into the recommendations of the Defence Force Service Commission. So they will be reporting today. And then the third item is the presentation of the letter of the President on the extension of the employment of the SANDF in KwaZulu-Natal. The period is 15 June to 15 September, it's for 3 months. And then number seven is the presentation on the proposed study tour, and then we do the minutes towards the end. So this is how we've composed the agenda for today. Because I've added one or two items that were not on the agenda as we looked at it at our last meeting, I added the study tour presentation as well as the consideration of the presidential letter. Those are the two. In that way, I'll request that we adopt the agenda.
And I so move.
Mr. Maren moves. Any seconder?
I second,
Ms. seconded the agenda. Okay. Colleagues, thank you very much. I'm not going to waste time. I will invite, you've removed the agenda now. I will invite, I think the first item on the agenda is a okay. So you wanted to move to the adoption or to the third term, okay, move to the third term program. Then we'll come back to the annual activity of the DFSC. We're going to be quick on this one, colleagues. So that's today, the 25th of August. And next week, Thursday, is a briefing by the NCACC on its first and second quarterly reports and an update on the Open Secrets case. And possible demonstration of the new IT system that they are introducing. And then we consider the minutes. On the 8th is the briefing by the minister on the appointment of the Reserve Force Council. You recall that the term expired some time, and we've not received the presentation on the new members and the chief of the Defense Reserve Council too retired some time back. So there's a vacancy there. So want the minister to brief us on the appointment, the filling of those vacancies. And the briefing by the DO in response to the succession planning discussion, status quo challenges and the way forward. And it's just an open invite to them to discuss with us succession. We're not looking only at the top level, it's just right down to the lower positions. So, and then we take the consideration of the report on the strategic overview of the SNDF midterm. That's our report that will be presenting, and then the minutes. And then we deal on the 15th, we take the discussion on the one military RAM project, plan and presentation on the background, status and challenges with upgrades at 2 and 3 military hospitals. I know these two other military hospitals were also part of the RAMP program. So the presentation on the one military hospital exposed some challenges. And so we want to receive the presentation on the status of our of the other two hospitals as well. And then we discuss, and then the discussion on the tour options for the first week in December. But we'll propose the date when we present when we make the proposal on the study tour. So colleagues, this is the program for the quarter. I hope we've covered everything that was discussed. Please indicate if there's anything that we've actually omitted, colleagues. Over to you.
Chairperson, from my side, the only thing that I'm missing, I haven't got any problem with the matters on the program. The only concern that I've got that is not there, that has been very very much in the news lately, and that is the status of our prime mission equipment. Specifically, we know that all the aircraft that is grounded currently, that we're going to get feedback on that, and also, you know, all the frigates. We know that the last one that was serviceable was basically coming down from Mozambique and is also now in for repairs. So we need to know how do we stand with regards to 21 squadron, you know, set 2 squadron, Langebaan, and also we know that there was reports on the helicopters and the C-130 and all that. So I because that is so critical for our defense capabilities and defense readiness, that we need to get a briefing sooner than later on that. So I'm not quite sure, you know, when we can do that, whether it can be fitted in somewhere or whether we must wait for the first opportunity in the third term or the last term. But that is the only thing that I'm missing. The other things are obviously very important, and one cannot downplay any of them. However, that's the only thing that I'm missing.
Okay. No, that is fine. Peter and Willem, please note Mr. Mare's suggestion on the item that he is proposing. And are you suggesting I think if we can close the meeting, all the better, so that we run through all the prime mission equipment, the serviceability.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that, but just that we, as the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, are...
Okay, that's fine. So we'll either slot it in, or maybe let's do it when we come back, because it's September, and in other words, it's just 2 months. Let's do it in the third, when we come back, fourth quarter, as well as the first item.
We can do that. Just keep in mind, the longer that we stay grounded with all our instruments and equipment, our defense capabilities will be. So just keep that in mind. So the longer we wait, the worse we will be off.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Mr. Zola Khumalo, please mute your mic. No, thanks, Mr. Mare. We will look at that. In the fourth quarter, and it's going to be in our first meeting. Any other thing, Colin? All right. It doesn't look like there's any other thing. Does that indicate acceptance, colleagues?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's in order, Chair.
It's in order. Okay.
No, it's fine. Thank you. Mr. Mutle, thank you. It's in order.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mutle moves and Mr. Mare seconds. All right. So the program is accepted. Let's move to the second item. Is the presentation by the Defense Force Service Council. I don't know who's on the platform. Nandi Party, did you get the delegation list? I think you did give me the delegation list. Okay. Mr. Robinson, the Chairperson of the Defense Service Commission is in the meeting.
Yes.
Together with other commissioners, so he will do the honors by introducing the colleagues that is in the meeting with him. Mr. Robinson, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening, and good evening to members of the Joint Standing Committee. We have with us four commissioners. We've got one apologies. We've got Commissioner Kamala. We've got Commissioner Esop. We've got Commissioner Mabelani. Commissioner Zulu has given an apology. He's committed elsewhere. I'm not sure about the deputy chair. I think she might be stuck in another meeting. She hasn't indicated as yet, but we'll proceed. So there are four of us out of seven commissioners, chairperson, and we have the head of the secretariat, Mr. Motsepe. Thank you very much.
I welcome you, Mr. Robinson, as well as the commissioners present, supported by the team representing the staff. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. May I ask Nandipa to fly the presentation, please? Thank you very much. There we are. Chairperson and members of the committee, we have a fairly short presentation. It's 26, 27 slides. Can I have the next slide, please? Introduction. Thank you. I'm going to just go briefly through it. In terms of Section 62H of the Defence Amendment Act, the Commission must, within 2 months after the end of each financial year, submit a report on its activities and findings to the minister. Furthermore, Section 62H states that the minister must then cause a copy of the report to be lodged with the cabinet and tabled in parliament. The aim of the presentation is to brief the standing committee on our annual activity report for financial year 21-22. Next slide, the scope, please. Thank you. There are five issues: performance information, governance, human resource management, financial information, and then the conclusion. Next slide, please. Thank you. Within the commission, the chairperson, in other words, myself, is the responsible person to ensure that all strategic and operational functions are executed within the limits of the allocated vote. The Commission manages and controls expenditure of its vote or the current allocation within the adjusted budget transparently through its Budget Control Committee meetings. Expenditure of the vote, the Commission surrendered 2.7 million of its operational budget during the reporting period. This accounts for 17.7% of its total allocated budget. This is due to various strategic and operational factors, including the negative impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. We think it's better to surrender the monies, which ultimately don't reflect too negatively on our future budgeting process. Next slide, please. Performance information. The table. Thank you. The vote for 21-22 was 15.1 million. The HR budget was 9.6 million and the operational budget was 5.5 million. Next slide, please. To continue, we surrendered 2.7 million and this is partly due to the following. The tender processes for the upgrading of the main boardroom conference system is almost finalized. This cost entails an installation of 770,000 and the yearly maintenance fee of 181,000 for the next 3 years. The procurement process for the website, which was deferred during February 2021, in order to obtain further clarity on the costing and cost effectiveness, that is less than the projected amount of 1.5 million given to us by CITA. The Commission directed their consideration to approach external suppliers who could charge less and the 1.5 million be explored. Next slide, please. A non-financial performance information. The audits. The Commission has no audits performed on the performance information provided for in the annual activity report of 2021 by the Auditor General. Furthermore, no audits were performed throughout 21-22 by the Internal Audit Division on quarterly reports against the Commission's annual performance plan 2021-22. However, the Internal Audit Division of the DoD was requested by the Commission to conduct an ad hoc audit on the management and substance of the management of substance and travel advances and claims within the Commission in November 2021. Strategic engagements. Next slide, please. Thank you. The different working environment caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, its associated lockdown and safety regulations from 27 March 2020 resulted in the Commission utilizing virtual and hybrid platforms for continuous interactive engagements between the Commission and the strategic stakeholders such as the Minister, the Joint Standing Committee, Chief of the South African National Defence Force, Reserve Force Council, and the Department of Defence Services and Divisions. Next slide, please, on governance. Thank you. The Minister of Defence and Military Veterans as the executive authority is responsible for the oversight on organs of state within the department. The Commission submits quarterly performance against plan reports and an annual activity report according to its legislative requirements, as well as National Treasury and Department of Defense timelines and guidelines, and reports on findings and recommendations as per Section 62 of the Defense Amendment Act. Even though the Commission does not have any registered corporate risks on the DoD Enterprise Risk Management Register, managerial challenges such as the human resource structure is recorded and as such within the DFSC risk register. Continuation, please, of next slide. Strategic risks. The DFSC was unable to execute some of its planned strategic activities during the period under review due to a lack of support from the Department of Defense. Part of the strategic objectives include the inability to conduct consultative and follow-up visits to the following military bases and units. Internal deployment areas, the naval base in Durban, the South African Infantry School in Oudtshoorn, the South African Army Combat Training Center in Lohatla, the Warrant Officers Academy, and Fort Ikapa in Cape Town. Next slide, please. Continuing on governance, the mitigating strategy, the envisaged ministerial workshop was aimed at unpacking the role and functions of the Commission, including the visits to military units and bases. I think Admiral Kubu will speak to the retreat in the next agenda item. Next slide, please. Governance. Continued operational risks. Operational risks that had an impact on the overall achievement of the objectives were indicated as HR risks in the Commission's risk register. The challenges of the Commission to effectively execute its legislative mandate due to an inadequate core function structure, in other words, researchers, and the cost containment measures on the expansion and upgrading of posts by National Treasury. The structure remains challenged to render effective, efficient, and economical administrative support to the Commission, and as such impacts negatively on the achievement of its legislated and strategic objectives. Next slide, please. Continuation of governance. Again, mitigating strategies. The Commission has considered the possible restructuring of the of the Commission Secretariat in order to address the capacity challenges. The Commission further is requesting the assistance of detachment SINDF members with specific skills assets, which will enable the Secretariat to augment some functions, such as the management of its office in Wingfield in Cape Town. However, the Commission initiated the process of reviewing the Secretariat structure. That's still in progress. Governance. Next slide, please. Ethics and Code of Conduct. The Commission's Ethics Committee was established in January 2022, as was envisaged during March 2021. The role of the committee is to provide strategic direction and oversight on the ethics management on issues related to conditions of service as outlined in the Defence Amendment Act of 2010. The Code of Conduct for Public Service Act personnel employees is applicable to the employees of the Secretariat, while members on detached duty and members on call-up from respective reserve force units obliged to conform to the Code of Conduct for uniformed members of the SANDF. Continuation of governance, please. Fraud and corruption prevention. Commission can report that there was no incidence of fraud or corruption reported or investigated during the reporting period. Health and safety issues. Commission nominated a member of the Secretariat as the organizational health and safety representative for the Commission. The member reports all work-related hazards, risks, and dangers directly to the officer commanding of the Military Health Services HQ unit. The Commission continued to observe all COVID-19 regulations during working hours and meetings. The HR division assisted the Commission to obtain the necessary personal protective equipment such as hand sanitizers and masks. Continuation of governance, please. Thank you. Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans. The Commission did not appear before the Portfolio Committee during the reporting period. The Joint Standing Committee, we appeared before the Joint Standing Committee on 27 May to provide feedback on the implementation of its recommendations. The Commission presented its annual activity report for 2021 to the Joint Standing Committee on 8 November 2021. The Commission briefed the Joint Standing Committee on 17 March 2022 with regard to the outcomes of the planning meeting in preparation for the ministerial retreat, which hadn't taken place in the reporting period. Let's go on to human resource management, please. Thank you. HR management. The HR component of the Secretariat of the Commission has been and continues to be a challenge for the Commission. Only 13 members are staffed from a structure of 19 posts. Current structure is not commensurate with the level of research support required by the Commission. The reallocation of funds within item 10, in other words, the compensation of employees by means of an approved change to plan, allowed the Commission to call up a reserve force member on a continuous basis for 12 months. The Commission is currently reviewing the Secretariat structure in order to meet the personnel requirements for the execution of its mandate. This work is ongoing. Human resource management continued. Of the 19 posts of the Secretariat, three are vacant and unfunded. That's the Commission Secretary, the Media Clerk, and the Case Management Clerk. Of the 16 funded posts, three are also vacant or Assistant Director, Policy Review, a Researcher Level 9 post. Post could not be staffed because of the pending Labour Court case. That Labour Court case is basically out of our hands. It's been ongoing for 5 or 6 years now. The HR Clerk and Procurement Clerk, both level 5, the staffing of these posts was put on hold pending the contemplated restructuring of the defence the structure, which we are working closely with a component within DOD called DIMS. Continuation of human resource management, employee wellness programs. The employees were allowed to work from home through a scheduled rotational work plan in line with COVID-19 regulations. Personal protective equipment was issued to members. The posters and other infographics were displayed to raise awareness about the issue. Let's move on to financial information, please. Next slide. Thank you. The Department of Defense requested all services, divisions, and organs of state to adhere to an instruction from National Treasury dated May 2020 to reprioritize the DoD adjustment budget for 2021. The Commission adhered to this request and surrendered 2.7 from its operational budget to enable the DoD to address some of its budgetary challenges. The total expenditure against the allocation for the Commission subsequent to the surrendering of the 2.7 million in February 2022 was for the DFSC was 63.7%. Continued with financial information. Next slide, please. Thank you. The expenditure against allocation of HR budget was 86.6%, following the surrendering of 2.7 million during October 2021 and January 2022. The Commission was able to spend 45.5% of its operational budget. An amount of 15.1 million was allocated to the Commission for the 2021 medium-term expenditure framework budget. The Commission surrendered, as we've indicated, 2.7 of its operational budget during the fourth quarter. Next slide, please. Continuation of financial information. This accounted for 17.7% of its total allocated budget. Commission was unable to execute its planned strategic and operational activities due to a lack of support and cooperation from the DoD and the SANDF, as I indicated in an earlier slide. This was necessary due to various strategic and operational factors, including the adverse effect of COVID-19 lockdown regulations. There were no where we did not incur any virements or rollovers during the period under review. Next slide, please. Thank you. There was no, we can report no, that no unauthorized, irregular, fruitless or wasteful expenditure took place during the financial years under consideration. The asset management, the main asset register for the Commission is managed by the logistics components at the Department of Defense Headquarters Unit. All acquired assets were captured at the Defense Headquarters Unit on the Commission's asset register before it is distributed to the officers of the Commission. Next slide, please. Thank you. Quarterly and annual stock verification, according to DoD time schedules, processes, and procedures were conducted to ensure that all assets were accounted for. The Commission can report no findings or discrepancies on its asset management register for the period under the review. The Commission does not own any public, capital or infrastructure assets exceeding the amount of 500,000 Rand per item. Continuation of financial information. The Commission can report that no gifts were received that require recording and inclusion in the gift register for the reporting period. The exemptions and deviations received from National Treasury. Commission did not receive any exemptions and deviations, but complied with the cost containment measures as promulgated by National Treasury. Financial management continued, please. Events after the reporting date. There were no events, favorable or unfavorable, that occurred subsequent to the end of the financial year, 31 March 2022. Conclusion, Chairperson. The Commission remains resolute in its execution of its mandate, despite the experienced challenges. Secondly, there were possible solutions identified during the ministerial retreat to address the challenges experienced by the Commission in the execution of its functions, which will be addressed going forward. And the Commission is grateful for the opportunity to brief the Committee on, on its annual activity report. With that, Chairperson and members of the committee, it concludes our brief presentation on our annual activity report 2021-22. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Robinson. Let's take the second presentation. Admiral Kubu is going to do the presentation because it's also linked to the work of the DFSC. Is that in order, colleagues? We'll then deal with the two reports together. No objection. Advocate Admiral Kubu?
Excuse me, I see Mare's hand.
Oh, Mr. Mare, sorry, my apologies. Mr. Mare?
No, sir. I was expecting that good questions, but under the circumstances, I will lower my hand until later.
Okay. Now, thanks for accepting that, Mr. The proposal, Mr. Mare. All right. Let's take Admiral Kubu. Is also going to be brief, and then we launch into both presentations. Admiral Kubu.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to members of the Joint Standing Committee of Defence. Let me also acknowledge the Defence Force Service Commission and the commissioners present. Chair, as you indicated, I'm also going to be brief because I'm only reporting on the retreat that the Minister has committed to engage with the Defence Force Service Commission and make some pronouncement. So what I'm going to be presenting today is basically the brief. I will also just give a quick background. I will also give a quick background on the where we are in terms of the recommendations, but that is just to bring the commission, the Joint Standing Committee of Defence into confidence where we are. Next slide. We can skip that one. I will follow the following scope. I will talk on the background. I will do the comparison of the function of both the Defence Force Service Commission and the Military Bargaining Council, and we will propose the way forward. Next slide. Chair and members of the Joint Standing Committee of Defence, just as part of the background, I can confirm that in September 2021, the Defence Force Service Commission submitted a consolidated list of recommendations to the DoD on their findings over the period of 2013 to 2020. A formal response in this regard was submitted to the DoD and to the committee on the 2nd of November. On the 8th of November 2021, the Minister of Defence and Military Matters met with the Defence Force Service Commission, and in that meeting, the Minister committed to have the ministerial retreat to streamline the implementations of the recommendations and also further discuss the mandate of the Defence Force Commission in line with what we now know that there has been a re-establishment of the Military Bargaining Council. Next slide. When we prepared for the retreat on behalf of the Minister Chair, I have met with the Defence Force Service Commission in December 2021, and we discussed the report, and also we reflected on the DoD progress with regard to the recommendations that were tabled by the Defence Force Service Commission. I also subsequently met with the Defence Force Service Commission on the 11th of February this year, which was attended by the advisor of the Minister, Mr. Matumi. Also, we were also having other members from the Ministerial Committee, the Ministerial Liaison Office, and also the reps from the Labour Relations Environment of the DoD, and also members from the Defence Legal Service Commission, I mean the Defence Legal Service Division, where we discussed both the boundary management issues on the Defence Force Service Commission and the Military Bargaining Council. Next slide. Based on the outcome of the planning meeting, which we had on the 11th of February, we agreed that we are going to have the ministerial retreat, and the minister did commit to that. And I can confirm, Chair, members of the Joint Standing Committee of Defence, that we did meet with the Defence Force Service Commission, with the minister and deputy minister, and all the other members that the minister felt that they must be part of the meeting on the 11th of August. Next slide. During that meeting, we looked at the functions of both the DFSC and the Military Bargaining Council. We can confirm that the boundary management issues between the two entities were also discussed, so that when we say we are going to continue with both entities, we know what will be the boundary management issues that need to be attended. We can confirm that after the meeting, we agree that, and this is also what is enacted as well for the Defence Force Service Commission, their responsibility is to annually recommend to the Minister on improvement of salaries and service conditions of our people, and also recommend policies in respect of conditions of service. Equally, they are responsible to promote measures and set standards, ensuring effective and efficient implementation of policies on conditions of service within the DoD and the SNDF. When one looks at the Military Bargaining Council, they are there to engage on behalf of their members as part of the collective bargaining on issues of salaries, allowances, including pay structures, general service of benefits, general conditions of service, labor practices, and also they also engage on other procedures for engaging on unique activities within the unit, but equally to go into the unit and talk on behalf of our members. Next slide. We agreed both with the Defence Force Service Commission after deliberations, and we sometimes felt that there are no requirements for both entities to be present, but we finally, Chair and members of the Defence Force Service Commission, we agreed that the mandates of both the Defence Force Service Commission and the Military Bargaining Council are definitely different. The DFSC is therefore advisory role directly to the Minister and of Defence and Military Veterans and on military veterans on issues with regard to service conditions, whereas the Military Bargaining Council has a negotiating role on behalf of our own members. We agree that the outputs are different. The establishment of the Defence Force Service Commission was never there to replace the MBC. The two entities, therefore, are not comparable. They might seem similar, although we believe that they are not. The Defence Force Service Commission plays an advisory role, as I've already indicated. And we believe if this is the mandate of the Defence Force Service Commission, there should not be a bounty management issues. Next slide. In terms of the way forward, Chair of the Joint Standing Committee of Defence and members of the Joint Standing Committee, we can confirm that after the interventions and the meeting that the Minister chaired on the 11th of August 2022, the following way forward was agreed upon by the Minister and the Defence Force Service Commission and ourselves, that we are going to allow the two entities to run for a period of a year while we identify and attend to all the possible boundary management issues. And during the period of this 1 year, we will again meet and make sure that if there were boundary management issues, they are actually going to be ironed out and make sure that those boundary management issues that can complicate in the functioning of the two entities are attended to and addressed. And the Minister will make the final pronouncements after a year going forward. So then what it means in terms of the response to yourself is that the Minister has decided to give the Defence Force Service Commission and the Military Bargaining Council a fair opportunity for a period of a year for her to be in a position to make some informed decision.
Chair, I submit. Okay. Thank you very much, colleagues. I thank you, Mr. Robinson, as well as Admiral Kubu for the presentation tonight. Self-explanatory, but obviously there are matters that the colleagues want to engage you on. All right, Mr. Murray, your hand was up first. I will take you. Let me just check who else has his hand up. Okay, so far it's your hand. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much to both the presenters. It is much appreciated. I just wanted to take a proverbial step back and that you must just assist me. As I can recall, because the Bargaining Council was not acknowledged in the past, the Defence Service Commission played the role of acting on behalf of the members or the employees. So in other words, they represented the employees versus the employer, which is the Minister and the DOD. It seems to me that part of the function as I read through this and I followed the presentations, that part of the functions that would normally reside with HR department, with Admiral Kubu's department, they are now saying, you know, the Defence Force Service Commission will now do that and make those recommendations to the minister. But then they do not represent any, the employees anymore, but rather the employer. That is a significant difference in the whole existence of the Defence Force Service Commission. So I am a bit confused as to the perceived duplication of functions that we see, not only between the Bargaining Council and the Defence Force Service Commission, but also between what a normal HR division must do and that of the role that Admiral Kubu has presented to us, at least for the year, for the next year. So maybe you must just enlighten us in terms of the history and why this is not a duplication of functions and of costs. The second thing I want to ask is the Defence Force Service Commission, what is your role in contact with the Defence Force Service Council? We know that the council has not been reinstated or the members appointed yet. I know that there was a meeting between the outgoing board and the minister, but we haven't received feedback lately of that. So where do we stand with that and in terms of their connections with them? Then I've taken note of two things. The one is an upgrade of the boardroom of 182,000 rand. What kind of boardroom is this? Why is this needed to spend so much money on a boardroom? And seeing that the Defence Force Service Commission's role is actually to go out and visit sites, bases where the soldiers are, where you can look at the conditions of service and of the members. Maybe you must just explain that to me. And then also with regards to the role of the Bargaining Council going forward and the Defence Force Service Commission. In the Bargaining Council, who will represent the employer and who will represent the employees? As I understand it, in terms of Bargaining Council, the unions will represent the employees and obviously the employer will represent themselves. What will be the role of the Defence Force Service Commission in that regard? And then I want to know, seeing that they have visited quite a number of bases to look at the conditions of service of those employees and our soldiers. The one thing that we have been made aware of over the last year, and that is 14 Sai or Umzumvubu Regiment. Chairperson, you will recall that we discussed that yesterday, where you said that we must, and we will have a briefing on those 850 members who have not been paid. Has this matter been raised by the Defence Force Service Commission? And if not, it'll be strange. I'm sure you're aware of that. And have you paid a visit? Because I believe I'm told that the conditions was quite appalling for those members when they arrived at Umzumvubu. And there was quite a number of complaints. And there was even a board of inquiry into that in that situation. So if I can get feedback on this, I'll appreciate that very much. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No, it's fine. I will let you deal with Mr. Mare's questions. And thereafter, I will pose my questions as well. I don't know who will start.
May I start, Chair?
Mr. Robinson,
if I may.
Yes, please do.
Thank you very much, Honourable Marais, for those issues you've raised. You first spoke about the relationship. You used the term Defence Force Service Council. I assume you mean the Reserve Force Council. I could be wrong. I'm not aware that there's a Defence Force Service Council.
You are correct. My apologies. You are correct.
There's a Reserve Force Council. Yeah. We had a memorandum of understanding with them. They work with Reserve Force members, uniform members. So that's the relationship. We had an MOU developed. Their term of office came to an end, if I'm not mistaken, at the end of November 2021. So that's the formal, it's a formal relationship. They have attended some of our meetings. They've briefed us in terms of some of the projects that they have developed in the past. That's the one thing. If I can respond to the question around upgrading of the boardroom, it's not the actual boardroom that's upgraded. It's the technology that's upgraded so that we are able to have video facilities. And because I guess the question of having virtual meetings and working in a new way might be with us for quite some time, and it might be going forward a lot more cost effective to have virtual meetings rather than transporting people up and down the country for different purposes. So that's the upgrade. It's the new technology that's come in. We've gone out on tender. Maybe Mr. Motsepe, who's the head of the secretariat, would want to elaborate a little bit more on that issue. But that's the commission has one floor in the headquarters of military health. So we have one floor and we have a boardroom on that floor. The third one is relation to, if I understood you correctly, Honorable Murray, 14 Sai. We went to 14 Sai, I think that was based in Umtata, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
I think we were there in 2017, 2018, most probably 2017. I'm not aware that we've revisited the 14 Sai. And I don't think we went to a place called Mzumfubu. We went to 14 Sai. It's within Umtata itself, I'm open to correction. Maybe Mr. Agubani, our researcher, can add to that. We did make certain recommendations. We visited the place. We made certain recommendations. Those recommendations were part of the collective recommendations that Admiral Cooper was talking earlier about. So we can avail those recommendations. The issue of the role between the union and the commission. I personally don't see that there's a contradiction between what we advise the minister on conditions of service. So we don't, as far as I understand, negotiate on behalf of members, uniform members. We make recommendations directly to the minister, and in the Amendment Act, the conditions of service, there are listed 22 conditions of service. Yes, many of them are HR related, but a number of them are around tools of trade. So that's my understanding. I think there's a distinct role for the Commission to play in the future. Of course, it's up to, and it's the prerogative of the Minister, once a year has gone by, to see whether there is continued duplication or not. But I suspect as we move forward, we might find that the roles become a bit clearer in time. So I think I want to leave it. I don't know if I've answered all of the questions that were relevant to the commission, but those are some of the issues. I don't know whether some of my other commissioners would want to add or comment. Certainly, I would want Mr. Motsepe to comment about the upgrading of the technology in the boardroom. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The head of secretariat.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Maybe just to add on what the chairperson has said with regard to the boardroom. Yes, the boardroom was upgraded by installing the what we call a video conference system. As the chair has explained, it's just to try and anticipate, you know, the new way of doing things as a consequence of COVID. And as we speak right now, it is fully being installed, and it will even ensure that we continue to have meetings irrespective of the challenges of a distance and all that encountered. So that is basically the main reason for the installation of the video conference system.
Okay.
I don't know if there's something. And on the issue of, sorry, Chair. When we, 14 Sai, we visited, the Commission visited 14 Sai on the 24th of August 2017. And since then, we never had the follow-up a visit to them, but we visited them on the 24th of August 2017.
Okay. All right. No, no. Okay, colleagues, I have two questions.
Sir?
Yes, sir. Admiral Kupu, yes, please come, you may come in.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also just want to attend to Honorable Marae's questions, in particular that speak around the issues of the NDC and then the Defence Force Service Commission in terms of the boundary management issues. Indeed, Chair Honorable Marae is correct in terms of some of the analysis. Especially when you talk on advisory role that the Commission will be. When it comes to the advisory role that the Commission, Defence Force Commission will be doing for the Minister, but we look at that advisory role in a different line, not in terms of the policies that are drafted by HR, or in terms of some of the strategies and interventions that are coming from HR that will be attended to or advised to the minister by HR. Service conditions are quite broad. They not only talking to HR alone, they are talking to other structures as well. For example, LOC in terms of facilities of our people is part of those things that we are responsible to provide to our members. That's why you see that you, as the Commission, I mean, as the Joint Standing Committee of Defence already, you know, have reports on 1 military hospital and 2 military hospital, 3 military hospital. Those are not really issues from HR perspective. They belong to LOC and SAMS and all the other structures. So the committee looks at all these things, not only in line with HR alone, but equally one could still argue the same and say if all the structures are doing their job and they also advising the minister in their own respective environments and probably saying maybe there is no need for the Defence Force Service Commission, we still believe that from where we're sitting, they are in a position to do thorough research outside what we do from all our structures, HR, LOC, SAMS, and all the other structures that are relevant in the department. And they can go further than that and come with a clean mind from their own unique environment and advise differently to the minister. And as people that are outside, they might also be very, very objective, more than probably us as the military, because maybe we're looking at in-house. They can also advise probably more objectively than us. So I see them also as a force multiplier to all these other structures and coming with different positions from their own unique environment and apply differently to the minister, which obviously after they have done that, we will obviously through all our own structures that are also reporting to the minister, look at their own recommendation and obviously advise the minister also in favor or not in favor and advance our own argument on those particular recommendations that are coming from them. So we foresee this as complementing one another as we go along. But Honourable Maria will also realize that in the last meeting, we also said there can be duplications in all these functions, and I think we acknowledge that. And that's why at the same time we felt that we need to stick at this type of retreat and be honest to ourselves on these particular issues. And the fact that the minister also said, let's give ourselves a year, it also confirmed that it was not a clear-cut, I would say, decision to say they won't be conflicting or boundary management issues and between the, you know, the MBC and the Defence Force and also those people that are also advising the minister. So we feel that because now we are where we are, let's rather sit all together objectively for a period of a year without fighting and see whether there is a requirement for the three. But not, I wouldn't talk strictly about the one that are already in the system, like the structures, like your log, your HR, but at least we can openly discuss the Defence Force Service Commission and the Military Bargaining Council, because it's sometimes almost out of the department and their mandates are completely different. But the fact that the two are also enacted, the part of the structure that have been approved through different acts, we cannot also just throw them out without going through this process. And then after we're going through this process, you might obviously have to go back and say, do you now go back and say we don't need them and follow due process to take them completely out. We just want to say that. But yes, there has not been an easy decisions on this particular matter, and there is still not a clear-cut decision from our side, but we believe the 1 year will probably help us. On the issue who's in the bargaining council and who's representing who in the bargaining council, I think it was correct. Unions are representing the members of the department, those are maybe members of the department, and the VOD is represented by the people that have been appointed by the chief and the minister. Those people, I can confirm, has already been approved and appointed by the Minister of Defence to sit at the bargaining council and talk on behalf of the department, the entire department. And then they will obviously be also being giving feedback to the minister and the chief SNDF on what transpired at the bargaining council. But they are definitely talking on behalf of the department, and Sandu is talking on behalf of its members. It is also difficult because our members also are still our members, and we also supposed to be talking on their behalf. So all these structures are difficult structures to manage, because it does not mean the same people that are sitting in the bargaining council are not responsible for our own members as well and talk on their behalf. And probably that's where, you know, there can also be some issues that people might feel that are they really honestly going to talk on behalf of their members, or are they only going to be fighting with Sandu? But we can confirm, Chair, to say the first meeting that we had, which are open with Sandu, we agree that we'll be as honest as possible, and all of us are there in terms of the interests of our own members and nothing else. And when we discuss those issues, it will be around the interests of our own members. The matter of the Defence Force Service Commission, I can confirm, Honourable Chair, and then that the Minister did meet with the outgoing Defence Force Council the same week where
We met with the Defence Force Service Commission. I know the Minister has already met them. And unfortunately, I'm not part of that particular meeting. I won't be able to say what has transpired in the meeting and what is the way forward. But I know that most of them, their contract has expired. And the minister, I know, is looking at the possibility of appointing the new council. That's all what I know for now in terms of that. But in terms of deliberation in that particular meeting, because I'm not part of that meeting, Chair, I cannot talk on it, but I know the minister is giving serious attention to this, that is this, the Defence Force Council. I submit, Chair.
Thank you very much, Admiral Kubu. You both of you have covered my questions. In fact, some of them were asked by Mr. Mare, but there's only two. But I don't want to pose them because we will be meeting with the department at some time in September to discuss to take a presentation on the other two military hospitals. The Defence Force Service Commission made findings on two military hospitals. And they've also made findings on the South African Military Health Services. I'm sure those matters will come up when we deal with we take the presentation on the other two military hospitals. Will you be amenable to share your findings with us, Mr. Robinson, ahead of the meeting with the department on the same issue, or you would prefer that we take the discussion on your findings when they are in the meeting to present this one? And then two, you were to engage the Department of Transport, DOT, on the utilization of public transport for the SNDF and the Reserve Force members. Can you unpack, elaborate on that point? Why is it necessary that public transport be utilized to transport members of the SNDF and the Reserve Force Council? And then my last point is you've surrendered 2.7 million rand. It's a lot of money if you consider the size of your budget. It's 17.76%, that's what you said. Is it a complete surrender, or you are expecting the money to be rolled over in the new financial year, I think meaning this financial year? I also note your concern that there are a specific task that could not be performed due to lack of cooperation from the side of the Defence Force as well as the Department of Defence. I wish that be dealt with at your meeting with the Minister. It's a concern. We don't want the work of the Commission be impeded in whatever way. You have been appointed, you have a mandate given to you by law. So, and any suggestion that you couldn't do your job because there was no cooperation is regretted, and we don't want that to happen ever again. Should it happen, please don't wait until you put it in your annual report. We meet with you regularly. So in our engagement, please raise those matters so that we are able to deal with them as quickly as possible. So those are the only matters that I wanted to comment on. Over to you, sir.
Chairperson,
thank you.
Chairperson, maybe just before Mr. Robinson responds, maybe they didn't understand my question on Umzimvubu. And I'm not sure, it seems like the Dispensable Service Commission is not aware of this dilemma about this plus minus 800 people that were called up for Operation Prosper to be deployed, and when they arrived at Umzimvubu or Fort Insai, it was a total mess and they had to sleep.
Mr. Mare, are you not preempting the presentation on that issue? Remember, it's on the agenda.
Yeah, I know. I'm just asking whether the Defence Force Service Commission is aware of that. It seems like they are not aware of that. So that was more my question, because they responded about their visit in 2017 or even earlier. And I was more referring to, you know, what has happened over the last year or year and a half. And it seems like they are not aware of that.
Yes, let me check if they are aware or not, but I don't want them to deal with the details of it, because it's on the agenda and we deal with it at the right time.
Thanks, Chairperson. Now, I'm certainly not aware of the issues around Umzimvubu. Maybe one of the researchers or Mr. Motsepe is aware, but I certainly I'm not aware. Let me come to your last concern first, Chairperson, about the lack of cooperation. Yes, we accept your comments. We take it in good stead. I've tried to meet with the chief of the SANDF. I had a meeting that was scheduled for last Friday. It was to try and unblock and try and understand what are the blockages and try and unblock some of those blockages. The meeting was postponed at the last, at the 11th hour. I've requested the head of the secretariat to engage further with the personal staff officer of the chief, so that by the end of August, in other words, tomorrow and first 3 days of next week, that I engage with him and interact and see whether we can resolve the issue. But I do take your point. Certainly, if it persists, we will come back to the committee. The issue of surrendering 2.7 million, no, it's not going to be rolled over. It doesn't affect our MTEF budget. So it's very clear that we surrendered it because we thought, given the particular circumstances around not utilization of those funds, it doesn't affect us going forward. Maybe Mr. Motsepe would want to add to that a little bit later.
No, that's fine. I'm happy with that.
You're happy with that?
With our response.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Chairperson. The last one is around the Department of Transport. I know that the research has been doing, he's on top of that issue. May I ask Mr. Magabani to please respond to that issue? Mr. Magabani?
Maybe he was not ready. Can you deal with our request for you to share
yes,
with
of course. Us the information? Certainly, Chairperson. We will certainly, with absolute pleasure, make our findings available to yourself and the committee before you engage further on the issue. No problem, sir.
Thank you so much. Makobane, are you ready? All right. Doesn't look like
Chairperson, may I come?
Okay.
It's Commissioner Mabilane, yes. Mabilane? Do have information on what you are requesting. Chair, we did have an informal engagement with DOD. So we wanted to investigate or explore transportation solutions within the Department of Transport Control that can be accessed by the SANDF, the uniform members, including the reserve force members. So when we spoke to them, they then advised us to formalize the engagement processes, meaning we need to go to our minister to write to the Minister of the Department of Transport so that we can create, you know, a work group that will consist our researchers and the DOT personnel. So Chair, that is in process. Due to COVID, we were not able to engage further than what I'm reporting now. But our interest, we wanted to explore, you know, solutions that the DOD can access, you know, for the uniform members. So in that case, once that has been done, when we are done with our work or our research or our investigation, I believe that a recommendation will then come forward. But I think we will give you update, Chair and members of the committee, in terms of our investigation and our exploration of what we see as a solution for the SANDF. Chair, I hope my response may give you comfort in your question.
Yes, no. I'm happy. It's just that you're not telling us whether the solution that you are proposing is an appropriate solution for the defense force. And I'm raising this point because there was an outcry when during the floods, where members of the SNDF were seen transported in what was considered as an inappropriate mode of transport. And but I just want to I want you to take note of that. But I see the hand of Honorable Mafanya. So you'll come in after Mafanya, and Dr. Esop will also come in as well. Mr. Mafanya, before that.
Thank you very much, Chair. The on governance, I see where it's mentioned that there are challenges, capacity challenges in the secretariat or the DFC, DFSC. Now, my question is, what are the challenges that you are talking about in terms of capacitating the secretariat? Perhaps it may have, what the challenge that you speak about might have been part of the problem that we find ourselves in here now, including where there was this issue where you couldn't even do oversight to certain institutions of your home. Now, that is where I want to find out, perhaps you may have been the cause of such problems. What is it there that you lack in the Secretary's office? Thank you, Chair. Unmute, Chair.
Commissioner Mabilane, I invite you to comment on the remarks I made. I will also allow Commissioner Esop to say one or two words as well.
Thank you, Chair. I think one of our researchers, Mr. Thabo Magubane, is the one that may have been able to answer your question, because you are asking a technical question. I merely wanted to give you, you know, an information that says we want to start to look into that kind of solution. But what you are requesting, Chair, can be answered by one of our researchers, because they are technical in their work. And so may I request, Chair, that we come back to you with a full, it can be in writing, Chair, if you don't mind. We can be able to come back to you and give you the information that you are requesting. I hope, Chair.
Yes, no, thanks, Commissioner. I think Thabo Magubane is back now.
Okay.
Yes, I think we can invite him to just give us information.
Thank you, Chair. The solutions that we are looking into are, and the reason why it's taken us quite a bit of time to actually investigate them is because we want to make sure that they are appropriate to the SANDF, and it's something that we can, that is implementable. So it cannot be just something that is put on paper. So to answer your question, yes, we are also looking at the appropriateness of the concepts that we are working with. So I don't know if that answers your question.
That's fine. We'll leave it at that for now, because the matter is still under investigation. Commissioner Esop?
Yes. So, Mr. Chair, you mentioned making our slides available, which was the first part of the question. The second part of the question is, would we be available to attend that meeting? So, because I've been part and parcel of the investigations with the other commissioners, I'm happy to avail myself for that particular meeting. And then we've recently done a 3-mole visit, although it wasn't done it wasn't done as part of the findings, because it was the previous financial year we were reporting on, and we're currently concluding our 3-mole visit as well. Maybe that would aid your discussion when you do speak about 1 and 2 mole. Because 3 mole will only be discussed next year once we put our recommendations forward. But we're currently finalizing those recommendations on 3 military hospital as well.
No, I'm happy with that. And we will arrange that you come and present to us on both the findings on the 1 and 2 military hospitals, ahead of our meeting with the department. Okay, let me just thank you, colleagues. Have you answered the question that Mr. Mafanya raised on the capacity challenges?
No, Chair, I haven't. Honourable Mafanya, this is an issue that has been with us for some time. We do need extra research capacity, because a large part of our work is research based. So we would want someone, and we've interacted with the chief HR, in other words, the Admiral Kubu, on this issue to see whether we can get a uniform member detached from the SANDF to assist us in doing extra research on various issues. But that's the kind of capacity we lack. The way the commission is structured and the post levels is not sufficiently upgraded to warrant us having senior researchers. So we have to find a way around that. And there is a task team comprised of a couple of commissioners looking at restructuring in the light of the financial issues and the financial constraints, looking at restructuring that together with the unit within the Department of Defense called Director DIMS, the Directorate of Information Management. I think it's something like that. It's the old work study, in other words, so that we can bring in extra capacity. I don't know whether that answers your question sufficiently, but certainly from our side, we need that extra capacity ASAP. Thank you, Chair.
No, it's fine. We take note of that. We'll engage with the department during when we deal with the budget. I think during the course of this quarter, I think sometime in September or so. All right. But obviously, it will be in the portfolio committee on of defense. So we'll take it up, certainly. All right. So, colleagues, I wish to thank the colleagues from the DFSC for the presentation. A very enlightening report, very clear on what they do, what their challenges are, and what the achievements have been. And we have interacted with your reports, albeit unofficially so. We will call on you to present on specific topics that you have been able to cover during your performance, including the issue that you have just spoken about on South African military health services, as well as the two hospitals. We would have loved that you move quickly to the third military hospital, but obviously you have shifted that to next year, which means that we will not have the benefit of your report by the time we engage with the department on 1 and 2 military hospitals. But it doesn't matter, because you still do your job, and if for whatever reason you pick up things that the presentation would not have covered, you would be would welcome your findings and the presentation on those findings. With that, thank you very much for your attendance. You may take leave at any time when you wish so. And Admiral Kubu, are we done with you? I don't think we are done with you, because you are representing the sector, so you need to stay on for the presentation on the deployment.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks. It's been an honor to present. Thank you very much.
So much, Commissioner, and then the commissioners and the staff members of the commission. All right.
Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. All right. Can we then move to the next item? It's the presentation on the letters on the letter of the president. Admiral Kubu, who's taking us through?
Sir, thank you very much. We have got General Nompe Cheney from CJ Ops who's here, and I think he will be the one that discussing this issue on behalf of General Sangweni. The General is with us, and he will obviously advise us in terms of how he wants to take us through. Cheney.
Thank you. You know, the mistake we did was not to take apologies, so that we understand why people are not present to do the honors. And the fact that he's not present, Admiral Kubu, is there an apology, formal apology for her?
Yes, sir. I know SecDef and the minister and the chief, they are in a retreat today and tomorrow, and I think that's the reason why they're not in the meeting, Chair.
Oh, the minister and the deputy minister have received the two apologies for the two, minister and the deputy minister, and you're saying SecDef is also in the same meeting as well?
Yes, sir. Chair, SecDef and the chief are in the same meeting as far as I know.
Okay. All right. Let me then move to my General Nombesheni. Over to you, sir.
Good evening, Chair. Good evening, honorable members. I want to acknowledge also the presence of Admiral Kubu, and I believe he's with my chief, General Spangweni, and I believe DFSC has left already. I am Major General Mbecheni. I'm not sure whether I'm audible, Chair.
Yes, you are, sir.
I would ask the Secretariat to load the presentation, Chair.
You mean our Secretariat, General?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, Coach. Yes.
All right. support team. Thank you. Right, you may go ahead. Please eliminate the other things on the side so that it doesn't look crowded. The slide doesn't look crowded.
Thank you. Thank you. Next slide.
Colleagues, who's running the slides?
It's
me,
Coach. Yes. Okay.
It's me, Chair, and it is on. Is it not visible to you, Chair?
Oh, he's asking to move to the next slide.
Yeah, but also, Chair. I mean, this is not professional. It should be, you know, like a proper slideshow, not with all these panes and frames and hood. I'm sure someone can tell them. Go to that one screen right up there and click it and you will have a proper display. It's as if...
Yes.
I can come and train them how to do it properly.
Yes, but not when you are going to charge us for that service, Mr. Mare.
No. All for free, for the love of my country.
Okay, that's right. Nandipa, just put it in a nice presentation form. I'm sure you can eliminate the comments, you can eliminate the animation painting.
Can I suggest that they must press that button, enable editing first? First they must press that button.
Just go to that button, press it, enabling editing. Yeah, that's
better. Looks better. That's like Naribara for all.
Yeah. So thanks. I think go to the slide number. Okay. I think the scope, you may take us through.
Thank you, sir. The aim is to break the Joint Standing Committee on Defense and Military Veterans on the Presidential Authority for the extension of Optariot in KZN. The scope is reflected. I will be covering the background, the current force levels, the roles of the SANDF during Operation Chariot, the reasons for extension, contributions by the SANDF, and then photo evidence, and then the two presidential minutes, and then the discussion. Next slide, please.
I'm sorry, Chair. There's something wrong with my laptop. It doesn't want to move.
Okay. all right, doesn't want to move. Who amongst the content advisors has the right to share?
Chair, I can assist if Nandipa can close on that side. Maybe we can try from my side.
Okay, that's fine. Please assist, Doc. Are you enabled to share? Oh, yes, he is. All right. It's better. We can move to the second, to the next slide.
Thank you, Chair. From the background side, during April 2022, the province of KwaZulu-Natal and to a lesser extent, the Northwest and Eastern Cape provinces were hit by torrential rains and downpours that caused a humanitarian disaster. The floods caused serious damage to critical infrastructure, roads and bridges, infrastructure for essential services, which is water and electricity supply, as well as destroyed industrial and commercial business facilities. More than 30,000 people were seriously affected by the disaster, which also caused the loss of lives and considerable disruption of livelihoods. Several hundred people have lost their homes and belongings. This situation led to the president of the country declaring a national state of disaster for KwaZulu-Natal as well as the Eastern Cape and Northwest Province. Next slide, please. The DoD was requested to support the whole of government response effort aimed at bringing the situation under control. This disaster management government effort was and is led by the Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Department, COGTA, to effect appropriate relief, response and recovery. Consequently, the DoD, as the presidential authority, contributed to this whole of government effort by deploying force elements to KZN and Northwest, with the appropriate capabilities, which is personnel and equipment under Operation Chariot, which in this case is covering disaster management and humanitarian relief for an initial period of 2 months over the period 14 April to 14 June 2022, with the presidential minute as put there, 121 of 2022. The deployment was further extended for a period of 3 months from 15 June to 15 September 2022. Next slide, please. In support of these objectives, the DoD has deployed capabilities as its contribution to the government effort in the affected areas. The deployment of the SANDF was initially for a period of 2 months, as previously alluded, subject to extension for further period, depending on the evolution of the operational situation on the ground, which was extended for a further 3 months, ending in September 2022, due to the high load of work that needed to be done to ensure the provision of essential services to the communities in the affected area. Covering the roles of the SANDF during the disaster, it was repair and rehabilitation of roads, bridges, and essential infrastructure, provision and distribution of water to affected communities, force protection, protection of shelters, mobile and visible patrols. Lastly, search and recovery. Next. The current force levels in KZN, engineer elements, regional works unit, which is a KZN element, logistics supply support element, which is responsible for water distribution elements, for water delivery, and cargo transport elements. We've got area military health unit from KwaZulu-Natal and one SA Army subunit, a company one light utility helicopter A109 and the communication team. The current total strength in KZN is 409 members. Next, please. The reasons for extension. The SANDF during off chariot were there for interim intervention undertaken. There were interim intervention measures that were undertaken but not completed. This work was not done in isolation but in conjunction with the local government. We did road repairs at Izolibomvu and Lamesi. We have been doing backfilling and combating of sand washaway on important beaches. We're still doing water purification plant at Inanda Dam and bottling plant Hazemir to make sure that there is provision of bottled water and saturated water for the community, provision of purified water to affected communities and schools by means of water bangers. There is still refurbishment of damaged bridges at Izingolweni, Umbilo Park, Queensburg, Westwood, Westville, Umzuabantu. We're doing the repair of on-ramps, repacking of gabions to prevent further erosion and the bridge cleanup. Next, please. Contribution of the SANDF. The unit assisted the community to recover a lot. To mention the few, that is the picture of the bus that was washed away and recovered by the SANDF. Next, please. The water delivery to local communities. The SANDF has delivered water to the following areas: 20,000 liters a day in Take, Kwamashu, Sizela, Tongat, Kwamadigazi, Kwadududu, Endengezi, Nanda, Senzeleni, Imbilo, Pine Town, Langmesi. We are still delivering water at Kwamashu, Tongat, Sizela, and in Take. Next, please. We also delivered water to affected local schools, 5,000 liters twice in a week. Sinehlahla Primary School, Vusukukhanya Primary School, Sarasvati Primary School, Umthala Primary School, Kwandengezi High School, Kevingane Primary School, Phakathi Secondary School. We're still continuing with the work. Next, please. The SANDF has been doing mop-up operations in Pine Town to clean and clear the roads that were closed by mud and sand. The SANDF conducted mop-up operations at Kwamadigazi at a house that was affected by floods. SANDF deployed a bluff next to Toyota dealership to clean and clear the roads that was blocked by sand and dirt due to floods. Next, please. SANDF deployed a bluff military base at the shooting range to clean and clear the beach areas that were affected by the floods. Next, please. Distribution of donated items to affected areas. The SANDF visited Inanda to deliver food items, sanitary pads, and food. Next, please. The unit also visited Hammersdale and Gwangolosi to deliver food items, mattresses, and blankets. The unit assisted the Chaplain Division of the South African National Defense Force when they were distributing humanitarian aid to Kwamashu and Faith Life Ministries. Next, please. We also issuing of bottled waters to the local primary schools. The unit delivered 3,000 bottled waters to Phakathi Secondary School. just a photo evidence that is being done by our engineers and our members in the area of operation. Next, please. Next. The schools, painting of the schools. Next, please. These are the water purification and the sachet. Next, please. And then building up the roads, filling up the gabions. The last one is the presidential minutes, which was signed on the 14th of April, and the last one, which is actually extending the operation chariot up to the 15th of September next month. Thank you, Chair. I submit for
Wonderful job. Well done once again to the SNDF. You are really making us proud. The only thing now that is remaining, Dlamini is not here, or someone from from the communication section of the Defence Force. You know, when you leave KZN, you finally say goodbye. We wish you could share this with the country, even if it means buying a TV advert, just a 1 minute thing or 30 second thing that beams the things that the SNDF was doing when they were in KZN. Because where you are working, people would see you. But it's not the rest of the KZN population that is able to witness the good work that you are doing. I'm really excited. And Dr. Pasoko?
Thank you, Chairperson and colleagues. Chairperson, in appreciating the presentation as well as the sterling job that is being done by our army in that situation, I've got just a few questions that I wanted to put forward. Firstly, when they say they are doing this in conjunction with COCTA, exactly what is it that COCTA is doing? Then secondly, Chair, what is the role of the municipalities in all this? Because when you talk of the supply of water, the authority of water supply is also is there in municipalities. And for me, that our army is providing assistance doesn't necessarily mean those spheres of governance at that level should fold their arms. Also, the fixing of roads, there is an element of town planning that is supposed to be there. And also, Chair, tomorrow, our army will pull out. How do you sustain those programs if our municipalities are not participating? You know, I'm saying, Chair, this is a good kind of work that is being done by army, but how do you sustain this project? Then the last one, on the donated items, how do you identify the this? In fact, again, this one, Chair, is talking of the issue of partnership with your local councillors, your ward councillors in this case. Because for me, they are the ones who are supposed to identify these families so that when the army is leaving there tomorrow, there are no fights or whatever where people will be saying we were disadvantaged and that. But all in all, Chair, the point I'm driving at, how do you make sure that we are doing this in a coordinated manner so that tomorrow, when we appreciate this as the committee, even our people on the ground should appreciate this sterling work that is being done by our army. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pasopu. Thabo Motle.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just have one question, but maybe let me start by appreciating the presentation and indeed the the good work that the Defence Force is doing to assist communities that were affected by the floods in that part of the country. I'm raising a question, Chair, around the supply of water, because if I'm not mistaken, I think around Tangat area, currently there's a strike, and one of the demands of the community there is the issue of water supply, where the MEC Zigalala was there today addressing them, and in his address he made a commitment that he will seek intervention of the national government through the Minister of Water and Sanitation. And the presentation today says to us that the Defence Force is down there providing water. Therefore, I just want to get an understanding. Have they pulled out as yet? Are they still currently providing water to that area, particularly that area of Tangat, or have they pulled out? If they are, then the question that will follow is the outcry that they have no water whilst soldiers are still there, ensuring that at least there's an intervention in that regard. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. I've since recognized Tseko Mafanya as well as Mr. Mare. So, Mr. Mafanya and Mr. Mare in that order, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I also would like to appreciate the work that has been done by the SANDF in both KZN, actually in KZN, where the floods were a bit bad. And thinking now is that I would like us to caution where we may find our soldiers being abused in a way where other departments should have taken some responsibility. At the beginning of the floods, I understood quite well there was an agency and there were issues. But taking into account from the riots themselves in the past, our people ended up having more confidence on the army than the police. And so at some point, they didn't want to be serviced by police. So our intervention as the army should not be seen to be divisive in terms of our communities, because they are doing the splendid work, and the work that was supposed to be done by municipalities as well as COCTA. So I just wanted us to caution on that, because some of the things of providing water, it should be done by municipality itself. And there are areas where the police were supposed to pull up their socks in terms of addressing some of the things. Now, the question is that there were lives lost, bodies missing. I would like to find out from our army that are there still bodies that are missing? What sort of technology is needed to unearth that? What is it that could be done to unearth those bodies that are missing even today? Because those families still need to have a closure. And I still believe the police could have played a role in that regard as well. So those conflicting needs of our society, but when there are entities that has got to support, that are supposed to work that. So the intervention, it always came at a crisis level where we call in the army. But the minute the level, the scale goes down, it has to hand over, including those of giving people meals and all that. It's a good gesture, but it could be done even by NGOs as well as municipalities. I would like to thank you there. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mare, and then I saw Mr. Matumai's hand, so he will come after you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I can only also say what my colleagues have said, and compliment the Defence Force. I mean, they made us very, very proud in last year with the uprising in or the insurrection in KZN and Gauteng, and then lately with the floods again. And it shows that there's a specific role for the Defence Force, and we are very, very, very proud of them. So they also make our work very well, very much easier, because people see that, they experience that, and they then see the Defence Force and its role totally different from this negative issues that we always find about the Defence Force. However, I will just focus on the point on the agenda, and that's the letter. I think you will recall that we have communicated as a group via WhatsApp when that came out. And I think none of us were and are opposed to the work that the Defence Force has done. So in that regard, the presentation was fantastic. And if you can always get presentations in that manner for other deployments as well, it'll be absolutely wonderful. So compliments for that. And then obviously, I think what we need to do eventually tonight is obviously take note of the presentations, and then, you know, basically officially approve the deployment under Chariot. So I mean, you know, I know I'm a bit quick, but you know, when we get to that, I'll propose that we accept this and approve this, because it is wonderful work, and can only compliment the Defence Force for this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mare. And the suggestion is appreciated. Mr. Motsomai.
Ana ke ba tlo fela gore masola rona a le mosebetsi e matla e o di mo botata fela ke ba tlo tseba gore a gona le di mobile tse leng gore mo go etsagalang mathata tshwanang le a dikgogola a metsi mo e leng gore masola rona a kgona go thusa batho o le bone go ithusa ka di mobile clinics. Ke a leboga she.
Thank you very much. All right, so those were the comments, colleagues. Over to General.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I would like to give an opportunity to my chief, who's sitting there first, and the Admiral Kubu. Then I will come back and comment. Thank you, Co-Chair.
The chief. I think you mean the
Chief Joint Officer. You said he's with Admiral Kobe, yes. Yes.
All right.
Chair CJ Ops is not in a meeting now. We've spoken over the phone, so we can continue. Nombacheni can respond to all the questions, and then I will obviously just conclude after his presentation. He's the person that's been doing this on our behalf. And then I think he's got all the knowledge and information pertaining to this operation.
Okay. No, thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair. From my side, I would say that the Defence Force is working together with the local communities in KZN. We are not working alone. Well, we understand that we are there as an interim measure, and then the community is informed and they know that we will withdraw at the end of the day, because this is not our work. So COCTA and the responsible departments will carry on with the work. When it comes to the supplying of water to the communities in Tongaat, I know, Co-Chair and members, honorable members, that water is not enough. The water that we are being, the water that we send to the areas is not enough, because now we are not only supplying Tongaat, we are also going to the other areas. So the local government, I think now it's high time to take responsibility, because the SANDF has actually done a lot of work, finalizing a lot of things like the water purification plant in Inanda, and then the water purification plant at
Hamarze and the other areas. And we are not yet out from the mission area, as Mr. Mare has alluded that we are still there until the 15th of September. Coach, yesterday when I attended the meeting before the visit of the Deputy President to KZN, one of the questions that came out was that what is going to happen now that come the 15th of September and some of the projects that have been identified are not finalized. I said to the team, it's beyond my pay grade. Mine is to convey the message that the Defence Force has done its work until the 15th of September, and then we will take it from there now from our principals, whether from that time, whether the extension will be allowed. But I think the Defence Force has done its part. If I missed Coach, any question, I will respond.
Okay.
Thank you, Coach.
All right. I hope all the questions have been answered, colleagues. Okay. Doesn't look like there's any outstanding answer to the questions raised. I really thank you, General, for your presentation. Please consider what you call beating your chest. Is what you call this Trump thing? Blowing your please. You are doing a good job.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. All right. With that, please convey our appreciation to the chief, the CJ Ops, and obviously up to the chief of the Defence Force for the work, good work done. And we thank you. Indeed, we support your deployment. And of course, we can't sustain you beyond what you can do.
I like that.
Yeah, I think you have done your part now. There's stability in the province, and you have connected communities that were disconnected by the floods. You have assisted in reconnecting, water plants. And yes, there are areas, but the municipalities are there to take up the job. With that, colleagues, I think we can release the team and thank them for the job we've done.
Thank you. Thank you. Next premier of the KZN. You've done well.
Thank you, honorable members. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Chair.
Admiral, are you fine? Were you wanting to say anything?
Honorable Chair, I think your number Jenny did respond to all the questions. There is no need for me to add on what he said. And then we can confirm, Chair, from the department side to say, yes, if we are required to stay after September and then the president requires us to stay, we will, obviously, but we accept the responsibility that has been given to us. But we can also confirm that with the other body that has not been found, is still another concern, and that's the reason why we felt that this extension will probably also assist us, if possible, to find other bodies. So that the family can also make peace as well and accept, that their loved ones are, have been accounted correctly, and they can also have a peace of mind. So we feel sorry for the people of the KZN. So we're not in a rush to coming back, as only obviously if the president still requires us to be there, we will continue from our side to support the people of KZN as a mission.
Okay. Thank you very much. Admiral, please convey our appreciation to SECDEF as well. All right, colleagues, I think we can then release the team and then move to the last item. The presentation is not last but one. It's a presentation by Dr. Jansen van Rensburg. on the proposed tour. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and good evening to all the members. I just want to make sure if you can see the document on your side.
Yes, it's visible, Doc.
Thank you, Chair. This document was sent by Nandipa earlier this week to the committee. And what I'm going to try, I'll just run through it quickly because I know members have seen it. What this document relates to is just a quick concept note for a possible study tour between the Joint Standing Committee of Defence and the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans. And this document highlights potential focus areas for such a study tour and potential destinations. And it's based on the strategic plans of those two committees. Members will recall the breakaway we had in Pretoria, where we sat down as the two committees and drafted the strategic plans for those committees, which made for both committees provision for a study tour in the middle of this parliamentary term. And then just to point out that the aim of this paper is just to foster discussion amongst members. So what we're putting out here is ideas, and it's just an initiative to foster discussion amongst you yourselves as members of parliament and members of these two committees on the feasibility, the focus areas, and possible destinations for a study tour. Just quickly as background, if you look at the functions of the Joint Standing Committee of Defence, it comes from the interim constitution to focus on the budget, functioning, organization, armaments, policy, morale, and state of preparedness of the South African National Defence Force. Now, what has happened over the past 2 years is that the Joint Standing Committee of Defence has significantly increased its oversight activity, and there's been a very healthy overlap with the work of the Portfolio Committee of Defence. And if you look at the Joint Standing Committee of Defence mandate and its activities, and you join that up with the Portfolio Committee's activities over the past 2.5 years, you see that a lot of the areas that the Joint Standing Committee of Defence needs to focus on has actually been addressed. And for example, we focused as a committee on SANDF preparedness and operational capacity by looking at flying hours, Navy sea hours, reserve force constraints, etc. We spent a lot of time, the committee spent a lot of time on the SANDF's organizational structure. There was the symposium on force design and force structure. There was meetings on succession planning, which will continue in this term. A lot of engagements with the Defence Force Service Commission, a meeting on gender parity, engagements with National Treasury, and a lot of focus on the issue of compensation of employees. So this was a big area of overlap between the two committees. Well, the committees also looked at the utilization of the SANDF, like we did tonight, looking at the actual deployment and utilization of the military inside South Africa and abroad. And there were many engagements around armaments, looking, for example, around engagements with the NCACC and a number of engagements at both committees around the issue of acquisition, including oversight visits recently to Denel and Arms Corps. So if you read these activities together, the activities of the Portfolio Committee and the Joint Standing Committee, if you put those two together, there are two key areas that emerge related to the mandates of these committees that have become quite prominent in the past 2 years for us as support staff when we looked back at the past 2.5 years. The first is an oversight of defense capability and operations, and there was a lot of focus on South Africa's domestic and international deployments, ranging from the deployments last year in KZN, the current deployments in KZN, to the Mozambican channels, the Navy deployments there, the current deployments under Operation Vikela, and the DRC deployments where the committee has conducted a visit in previously. So that's one area where there's been a lot of focus. The other area where there's been significant focus and significant overlap between the two committees is around the issue of force structure and force design, with a specific focus on the human resources management component. Both committees have focused significantly on the issue of compensation of employees, which has now reached almost 70% of the defense budget. the SANF has also have a number of challenges that the committees have highlighted. And this includes forced rejuvenation at the bottom here, forced rejuvenation, the creation of a humane exit mechanism for older soldiers, and efficient succession planning. These are matters related to human resources management and matters that require long-term planning to ensure sustainable human resource management in the Defence Force. And I think this is one of the major areas of overlap between the two committees. And it's for that reason, in this paper that we once put forth to members for discussion, a proposal on a joint study tour between the two committees, focusing on matters related to the SANF's force structure and force design, with a specific emphasis on cost-effective use, human resource management, succession planning, and force rejuvenation. So that key focus area is something that we believe can where the committees can benefit from international comparison and from peer learning. How do they do it in other countries? What can we learn from other countries to do this better in South Africa? The question is, why now? Why is it a good time for the committees to go on such a study tour? Firstly, the issues we just raised, there's been regular engagement on this, ranging from the symposium done by the Joint Standing Committee of Defense and a number of regular meetings related specifically to human resources management. And both these committees have spent a lot of time on the issue of compensation of employees, which is crucial to creating sustainability within the Defense Force. And members will recall that the Portfolio Committee made specific recommendations in a BRRR to National Treasury to fund an exit mechanism, for example, and the system's been implemented. So the committee has made some quality recommendations. It's made a change, but what can we do more to stabilize the situation, and what can we learn from other countries? So the rest here is just an indication that there's been significant focus on this issue by the two committees. The other reason why it's a good time to do a study tour now is that if the committees go and do international comparison, it will be able to make concrete recommendations to both the Department of Defense and National Treasury on efforts to optimize force design, force structure, and specifically human resources management. Furthermore, if such a study tour can be conducted in the near future, it will also give this committee more time in the sixth parliament to oversee the implementation of its recommendations. And it will be able to leave further recommendations in its legacy reports for the seventh parliament. Another reason why it's a good time for a study is that it was included in both strategic plans, as I mentioned, for both committees. A joint study tour is also proposed because it is likely to be the most cost-effective because of the sharing of members between the two committees. So instead of doing two separate study tours, perhaps one joint study tour will be more cost-effective. And lastly, perhaps one of the most reasons we as staff are most excited about introducing this as an option is that Parliament's Defence Committees have not conducted any international comparative study tours since 2006. So it has been a while. For the two committees to do such an international benchmarking. So what we try to do in the rest of the documents that members received is just to see what are the options based on the suggestion we made to look at this human resources management, force design, force structure issue. What are the options out there to consider? And we also discussed it'd be good to visit, for example, one developed country that is as a stronger and more structured military than South Africa to see what we can learn from them, and one from a developing world which might face similar unique developing world challenges that we have in South Africa and unique challenges to the SANF. So through our own research as support staff and consultation with some external defense experts, we propose a number of possible destinations to members. And we try to include in this table here a number of comparative elements so that members can decide for yourself what looks best in terms of comparison to South Africa. And the countries that we found perhaps best suited for us to learn from in terms of force structure, force design, and specifically human resources management is a combination of the following. There's Australia, Angola, Colombia, Egypt, Germany, Singapore, the UK, and the US. These are in alphabetical order, so there's no preference in the order of this list. Members might note that we added some criteria here for comparison. For example, defense spending as a percentage of GDP. Members might note that we, in 2022, are down to 0.76. For 2020, these are for the other countries. Members might note that most countries outspend South Africa on military affairs quite significantly, with countries like Colombia and Germany and the UK significantly increasing their defense budgets due to developments in Europe in recent days. Also, if you look at active military personnel, on the list is most countries have much larger militaries than South Africa. The only comparable ones in terms of size is, for example, Singapore and Australia. However, all these countries face different dilemma, and we added some key threats here faced by the militaries of these countries. Do they have more conventional military threats? For example, Australia has a conventional, strongly maritime and air requirements and a focus, whereas on the other hand, it's got the UK and US that look at more conventional threats and international force projection. And then you've got countries like Colombia, which has internal stability problems and also uses their military internally a lot, and Egypt with internal and external regional instability. So these are the matters you can consider on the list in terms of a comparison. There's also, we added some military shortfalls and strengths. A lot of these countries are spending a lot of money to upgrade their militaries now, and there's a lot that can be learned from that in terms of strengthening your defense force in a time of need. But coming back to the bottom here, perhaps the focus areas that we said earlier, focusing on force structure, force design, and specifically human resources management. How does these other countries compare to South Africa? And here you can see South Africa currently spends around 70% of its budget on compensation of employees. If you look, the information was not available for all the countries we looked at, but if you look at the others, for example, Australia spends 30%, Colombia spends around 40%, the UK 30%, and the United States 24%. So members can see that we spend a significantly higher percentage of our defense budget on compensation of employees, which leaves very little for capital acquisition and operations. Whereas we can go to these other countries to see how they get it so low and what are the systems they put in place to get it so low. So that's a good comparison in terms of COE expenditure. And we also looked, again, the data wasn't available for all the countries on open platforms. But if you look at South Africa, only around 4.3% of our soldiers are younger than 24 years. And then you have 35% between 25 and 35 years. This is very, this does not really align to most militaries. And the data you can see here in Australia, a quarter of their military force is under 24 years. In Germany, 50% is under the age of 29 years. In the UK, 30% is younger than 24 years. So it shows you that this is the problem that the committees have identified, and we have an aging force. There's no rejuvenation. There's problems with exiting older personnel and keeping the force young and youthful. So what can we learn from these other countries? How does Colombia, for example, get it right to have massive youth intakes of 8,000 in 2022? There's much to be learned from these countries. So in summary, perhaps looking at the last year, I tried to really summarize this in just one sentence. What are the main things we can learn from each country? For example, Australia, it has a similar force size to South Africa, and it seems to have very good management of its compensation of employees and force rejuvenation. If you look at Angola, what can we learn there? It's a regional military power with similar challenges to South Africa, specifically aging equipment and reduced defense allocation. They've been significantly reducing their defense spending. So what can we learn? How are they doing things different to us? Colombia, similar internal and regional challenges to South Africa. There's a lot of use of the military inside the country. Good management of compensation of employees, it would seem. It is a developing state context. Their GDP is around the same as South Africa, so a lot of similarities there. Egypt is not a lot of data available from them, but it is the number one military in Africa. They're going through massive expansion, and there's a lot we can learn from them. They also face a lot of internal and regional challenges. So what can we learn from the number one military in Africa? Germany shows good management of its compensation of employees and rejuvenation, and there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from defunding your defense capabilities. They've significantly, over the past years, defunded their defense capabilities, and now when there's a need to increase it, they've allocated massive funds from that. So we can learn lessons around defunding your defense capabilities and what not to do, perhaps. Singapore. The key focus in Singapore would be to view a small military, around about the same size as ours, but it's a highly modernized force with regional challenges, similar force size to South Africa. The United Kingdom has very good management of its compensation of employees and force rejuvenation, and there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from defense budget cuts. It's also cut its budget in recent years, yet they maintain a very good COE expenditure ratio. So there's lots to be learned from the UK in managing your rejuvenation of your force. And similarly in the US, they've got something called the Defense Officer Personnel Management Act on career management and rejuvenation. So they've got this act and systems in place to keep their force very young, as you can see, 45% under 25 years. So that's perhaps something that South Africa can take a look at. So these are the countries we would like to propose, but this is, as I said earlier, this is open to members for discussion. The chair will lead the discussion. Perhaps as a last point, just to mention as part of the discussion, members should keep in mind there are two potential periods for this study tour. There is a constituency period from the 2nd to the 15th of December of this year. That is one option that members can consider for the study tour. And then normally in January, there is also a period where committees can go on study tours and oversight. The parliamentary program for next year is not out yet, so there's no certainty yet about a potential date in January. But should members prefer, that can form part of your discussions, whether you would prefer December or January. And as always, these applications will be subject to the approval of the House Chairperson and other considerations of Parliament, budgetary considerations as well. But we thought, since it's on the program of the two committees, on the adopted strategic plans of the two committees, we wanted to look at what can the committees focus on, what have we done well in the past two and a half years, and what could be valuable for members to leave a lasting legacy of taking the defense force forward, and in so doing, where can we best study this? And these are the suggestions we would like to put to you. Chair, I'll hand back to you, and maybe you can lead a further discussion on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Willem. What is good about the topic that we are discussing today is that it comes late in the term, and when we have had a lot of investigation into our own situation, we are then in a position to compare ourselves to any of the countries that we will visit, and as opposed to taking a study tour very early in the term when you have very little information about what is before you. Now we know what is before us. We know what the challenges are, and we have been looking for solutions together with the department. And now we are going out to see how other countries have been able to overcome the challenges that we are still grappling with. So that is my input on this. So colleagues, let's engage now. Mr. Mare, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, thank you very much. First of all, compliments to you and Wilhelm on the work that you have done. It is outstanding presentation. The research work is outstanding. It gives us all sides to this subject. I must compliment you guys on that. That this is very proactive, and this is what I like about, you know, our committees in this term. Very, very proactive work. And it's not just a gallivanting overseas. This is work, and it's very relevant to what we do and our challenges. Obviously, first of all, I think it's also very important that we discuss it now and get to a kind of formality, because we know that, you know, all the, you know, the red tape in Parliament, it takes quite a while. And I know that from the previous term, there was times that we have planned for overseas study tours. And as in one case, I was actually on my way to the airport when the trip was cancelled. So it was poorly managed, poorly organized, and it was a whole shambles. So why are we doing this early? Fantastic. That's very, very proactive. So compliments to that. Obviously, when we consider this, and I like the idea of looking at a developing world force as well as developed world to see, compare us with others, but also to see what we have to strive and work towards. And I am just pragmatic when I say that obviously we will have to consider the costs, and that's why the combination of developing and developed countries to visit will be important. Hypothetically, you know, for as an example, Egypt, because it is in Africa, we need to compare us with Egypt at one stage, South Africa, with the number one force in Africa. So we must, there's a lot to learn from that, and we know that many of our defense industry, even manufacturing, has moved north and even to Egypt. And then from there, you know, there's the option to go to either Germany or to the UK. So from a cost point of view, and also a time, you know, band point of view, that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, so does Australia and Singapore, for instance, and so does the United States and for instance, Colombia as well. But cost comparison will be important. But I think this is a wonderful idea. I think nobody can point a finger to us and say that we are just traveling around. We're working a hell of a lot. And we are seldom going on oversights. So study tours, we never go. And I think this is an enormous investment into the future of reestablishing our defense force as a proud defense force that can really protect and save South Africa and for future generations. So I want to compliment you. I want to support this in principle wholeheartedly, but just a wish from my side, a request that we have to finalize this relatively quickly so that the staff can start with their work, internal work, if there needs to be, because there must also now be liaison with our foreign officers in those specific countries. So that everybody can be online, and it's not a rush job right at the end, which is very unprofessional. So thank you very much, and fantastic. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Any other contribution, Mr. Mutle?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair. I think Honorable Murray has covered a lot of ground in terms of appreciating
the work that has been done by Velem and the team in terms of ensuring that they give us sufficient information for us to be able to make a determination as to where can we go, where we can get the best and valuable information that will be able to empower us to do our work and contribute towards ensuring that our defense force become a better defense force. But I just want to find out, because I think they've looked at a few countries, and I would want to like to make a request that if possible, can they furnish us with information around the countries like Turkey, because I want to believe that there's a relation that is taking place between the defense force and the Turkish, even though it's more skewed towards the industry. Countries like India, Brazil, Russia, those that are in the BRICS, so that as and when we make a determination, it should be aligned with our government-to-government relation with those particular countries. So that's my plea. If possible, can they expand to those countries even before we make a final determination? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. All right. Yeah. No. It's thanks very much for the comments, and I'm sure it will be possible to do two countries, one in Africa, developing country, and the developed country overseas. I think Mr. Marais suggested the names, but Egypt, because of the relations, very strong relations that has with South Africa, and two, that there is a direct airline or airliner from South Africa to Egypt. I would imagine that would assist in putting the cost down. I know it's right up to the tip of the continent. So let's look at that. And I was also told that has opened up markets for our own goods as a country. Economically, the relations are also very, very strong. So South Africa, Egypt, I would prefer that it be, besides that, is number one. The military is number one and is invested a lot. Egypt has invested a lot in the military up there, and they're really taking it seriously. And again, from what you have presented, I think it supports us learning from them. And then Thabo is suggesting that we look at those that are in the BRICS and the the BRICS. It's obviously we should not consider going to very advanced countries, because we're not going to learn anything there. I visited America some time back. I'm departing from the BRICS country. I visited America some time back, and I went to what they call the Paragon or something. And I saw how big the structure there, and you know, very busy military, and the numbers are unbelievable. So you can't learn anything from that side. They're always on a war mode. So they are really investing in the military. and very big, very huge. I'm not saying we're not going to rent anything from them. I'm saying they're so huge in terms of investment and the structure and size. And we're not comparing with them. And China, I don't know what the situation in China in terms of their own military. And just look at those countries as well. And Germany is another country that, as we, I think Mr. Mare took it from my mouth, that it could also be considered as well. So, but again, it all boils down to the cost. And is also suggesting Turkey is not, Turkey is very strong, but I'm not quite certain in terms of, have you looked at Turkey, Doc?
Sure, I did look at Turkey. The thing that, what there's very little public information available. Mr. Mutle is definitely correct. There is significant developments in their defense industry and so forth. But the reason why we excluded Turkey in this specific case was they've got quite a big military. If I recall, they spent, let me just see, they spent quite a sizable, I think they spent around 3% of their GDP on defense, which is much higher than ours. They've got a very large defense force, around 350,000, and there's not much information available on their human resources management. So in terms of being a similar developed country with similar economies, perhaps, and a booming defense industry, that's the one thing we can go learn there. But if you want to look at force structure, force design, and human resources matters, I think they were a bit too big for us and a bit too high spending, and not necessarily known as a country that has significantly good management of their compensation of employees.
Yeah, and then India's military strength is 1.4 active personnel, 1.4 million.
Yes, Chair, on that issue, I did take a quick look at, I agree with you in terms of the big ones. It's difficult to learn from the big ones. The only reason I included the U.S. was because they have a specific policy and act in place around human resources management to rejuvenate their force, and I thought that could be a good study point. But at the same time, I do agree with you in terms of the big ones, and there I would include China, India, Russia, and the United States. Those are such massive militaries and are such another scale with international force projection that it is not really comparable to South Africa. A force with over a million men to compare to our force of 70,000, it's a very difficult comparison to make. And I think we can learn better from other countries, perhaps, smaller countries.
Okay. On that principle, Thabo, that you know, comparing going to a country as with massive strength as America, India, I think in China as well. And I know that even in military equipment as well, there would be it would be commensurate to the numbers that they have. The numbers of personnel that they have, so and the budget as well. So it's too big for us to take anything away from them. We'd simply just marvel at what they are doing, and so that is my concern when we go to too big the giants. Brazil, what is the situation in Brazil? I can see Mr. Mare want to say something. Just before Mare comes in, just before Mare, what is the situation in Brazil? Can you just quickly check?
No, I'm just nodding, and I actually agreeing with what you say. So no, I don't have to add anything at this stage.
Okay. Brazil, what is the situation in Brazil?
Chair, I did look at Brazil briefly. I can't recall now. the exact things, but it's also they've got quite a big military. I think one of the big considerations why I didn't necessarily look at them is the size of their military. I cannot recall their GDP spending on military now, but it is, compared to the others that we included, it's quite a bit out of the way as well. It might become an expensive destination to go to, and I don't think there are any direct flights between South Africa and Brazil at the current stage.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
If I may, Chair, I agree with the sentiments that have been made here, but my request in terms of availing that information, I think we'll be doing disservice if we say exclude, let's say, your military startup. China, for an example, you must look where it comes from and how it got where it is today. Part of the things that we need to consider as and when we move forward, for an example, our military size, which is around 73,000, with the population of 60 million. Comparison need to be made with countries like Turkey. How, for an example, I'm just making an example to say, how is Turkey progressing? And of course, they might be winning in terms of the budget and ensuring that they expand their military in proportion to their population. So forth and so on. Those are some of the things that we need to learn as and when we come back, so that it should not be only about the cost of employee and not looking at the importance of the size of the military versus the population of the country. Okay. It's my submission.
So let's do further work on it. I've just quickly looked at Brazil. Brazil, they are saying, is the second highest, is the second largest military force in the Americas. It's second only, they are saying, is second only to the United States. And I don't know what the population, coming back to what Thabo is saying, the Brazil population, that they could be number two population. In 2022 is 214 million. Yo, they're huge. All right, it's fine. Just work on just, okay. Do we agree that we take one in Africa? On the continent? And that one is Egypt, so that we start to narrow our choices. Do you take Egypt or any country? What do countries in Africa? No. I think that's a ground the principle. Do you take one in Africa and one abroad? If one in Africa, what is that country?
I will certainly support Egypt, Chairperson, because there is so much, and you have alluded to that, there's so much comparisons, and also the fact that, you know, let's be honest, Egypt has overtaken us. We are both part of the African Union. We're both part of the African agenda. Egypt is in the furthest north of Africa. We are on the southern side. I think we can learn from them and see how they have done it, how they have, you know, convinced their parliament and the powers to be. And I think they have done so much to develop their industry. To the contrary, you know, where we have seen, you know, the opposite happening in South Africa. So we have to come back and I think build that into how we can make sure that South Africa again becomes, you know, not necessarily the number one in Africa, but that we have to take note of what happens in Africa. I will most certainly support Egypt. I think it's a wonderful. Turkey is also can be a fantastic, and we know that. But there's a lot of controversies in terms of Turkey. A lot of these, you will remember these end user certificate stuff. Turkey was always involved, and I've never picked up that Egypt was involved in any of these matters. So Egypt is maybe not such a bad idea.
Okay, no, it's fine. It's just that we will not make a final word on this. Yeah. I know to consult DECO as well. When I was in the province, DECO said, look, guys will not let you go to certain countries because they no longer require any delegation from South Africa because of the number of delegations that they have hosted and what they are is becoming that they are picking up is that we don't learn from the previous delegations. It's new parliament sending people abroad, and they're saying, but you've been coming here, and we're not telling us what you have learned from us. You know, each time it's like you're learning. It's your first time you are in the country, yet you have hosted a number of delegations from South Africa, and they started not to accept the delegations on that are coming on a study tour. So I'm saying,
fortunately, Chair, our objectives and focus, I feel, is very specialized, is very focused, and I don't think any of the other committees have even touched on the areas that we will go into. So I feel very comfortable in that regard. However, I fully agree with you. There must be consultations taking place. It's not just a decision of ours alone.
Okay. So let's agree on the consultations, but let's narrow down the list so that we walk away with a narrow list. So Africa is chosen. Do I get, is there any objection to Egypt as one of the two countries?
No objection.
No objection to Egypt. All right, let's look at Brazil, Turkey, and Germany. So those three countries, just do further work on those three and then come back to us next week. Is that agreed?
Yes, sir. No problem.
Agreed, sir.
Agreed, sir. Okay.
Thank you so much. So that's yes, doctor?
No, I just want to say thank you, Chair. I'll edit the list and add Egypt, and there's Turkey, Brazil, and Germany. Then it makes for easier comparison for members. And I'll resubmit later.
And if you can look at the issue of the cost as well, what would be cost effective if we fly from Egypt to any of the three that we have actually selected? Because we must take that into account.
Absolutely. Fully agree with you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. I think we've concluded on that we've narrowed your countries down to three, Germany, Turkey, and Brazil.
Yeah.
But depending on the information that you produce, we'll then make a final determination. Great. All right. Colleagues, thank you very much. I think we have run out of time. How many minutes, Nandipa, do we have?
Just one.
Only one set, Chair.
Anyone said, okay, can we deal with it with 5 minutes to nine, colleagues? Thank you very much, Doc. Can we quickly just go through this minute before we rise? All right, minutes of the 2nd of June. This is the attendance register. Page 2. Just check if there. I'm checking if there are any corrections that you want to introduce, colleagues. Number 3. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. page 6.
I propose for acceptance.
Acceptance is proposed and seconded by?
Chair, I want to second, but I'm not sure. I saw my name. Was the person
okay. Let's check it. I think I saw your name. Let's check it.
Okay, sure, then I second.
I saw it. Just go back, go back. Bartlett.
Okay, it was an apology for me.
There is there's, but oh no, apologize. Sorry.
Yes, yes. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Let's take a fresh seconder.
Seconded,
Chair. Table seconds. Colleagues, thank you very much. I think it's been a fruitful meeting. And until we meet again, I appreciate it.
Excellent. Excellent meeting, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Much appreciated.
Bye-bye. Good.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.